It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff is here. Stacy is here. I am here with an apology. It turns out Google's jigsaw wasn't all it's cracked up to be. We'll also talk about why you shouldn't rely on Google Maps for all of your navigation. There's a lot more to come. This Week in Google is coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 515, recorded Wednesday, July 3rd, 2019. A phone for every country. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google. The show that's about nothing. If it's not Google, Facebook, Twitter, the internet, media, and more. Stacey Higginbotham is here from our new world headquarters, just south of the Space Needle. Hello, Stacey.
Where is it south?
I don't know. Where is the Space Needle from you?
I think it's west.
Can you see it?
No.
I think?
No.
Oh, I can see there. Mountains.
Nice.
I can see the Cascades and, no, the Olympics and the Cascades.
So
yes.
That's, yeah, so the Space Needle is at least a little west of you.
It's somewhere not, around here.
It's either northwest, southwest, or west-west. Anyway, great to have you. Stacey on IoT.com is her website. That's where you'll find the newsletter and, of course, her fabulous IoT podcast. That's the one she does with Kevin Toefel from aboutchromebooks.com. Mm-hmm. And also with us, the Tao Knight, Leonard Tao Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Narmer School of City University of New York.
We'll be back in 5 minutes.
Yes, Jeff Jarvis is here. Hello, Jeff Jarvis.
Hello, hello, hello.
Jeff is, of course, the blogger at buzzmachine.com, the author of many great books, including What Would Google Do? That's how he got on the show in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Many moons ago.
And I haven't let go since.
Thank God. We haven't let go of you. We would not let go of you. So I interviewed a couple of weeks ago the chief operating officer of a little Google company called Jigsaw. Which at the time struck me as a really cool thing. And I know some of the Jigsaw products. It's jigsaw.google.com. It's one of their, is it a moonshot? It's kind of.
No, it's a goody two-shoes.
It's a goody two-shoes. It's something companies do. They're, you know, how does technology make the world safer? And yet, I have to say, if you look at the projects that Jigsaw has done, like Project Shield, we've talked about that before.
That's an important one.
The VPN for journalists. They've done some, you know, there's a password alert Chrome plugin. Perspective is an API that they uses machine learning to spot abuse and harassment in online comments. So they've done some really interesting things. And then I read an article on Motherboard. Google's Jigsaw was supposed to save the internet. Behind the scenes, it became a toxic mess. I quickly sent a message to the producer of our show saying, did that triangulation air yet? And he said, yes. I said, in a way, whew, because what I didn't want it to do is air after this article.
I have to have a choice, yeah.
Right.
Well, if it had aired after the article came out, I would have asked him, but I didn't know when I interviewed him. So mostly the criticism seems to be of the CEO, Jared Cohen, who I did not interview. He's the founder of Jigsaw.
With Eric Schmidt. He's Eric Schmidt's co-author in a book. He's Eric Schmidt's guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the I have to say, now I read this, now maybe because I'm a little biased, because I was impressed with their COO, and we had a great conversation, and I thought they're doing some really good work. So maybe I was a little biased, but when I read this, it felt a little bit, I don't know, it felt like a hit piece, to be honest with you.
It did a bit. There was some stuff there, but it, yeah. I think there's
I think the challenge is, It's hard to show a culture of disrespect or misogyny if it's right. Not totally egregious.
Right.
And so I think what the issue that people are upset about here is that's tough to show is this overall arching culture amid the fact that these guys keep getting put on pedestals and lauded for being saviors of the internet when they're maybe not the most generous or nicest people to work with.
And I'm not defending them.
No,
I think you're right, Stacey, but just to play the other game, is now These publications that used to lionize everything about the internet find every opportunity they can to go after everything that might be at all bad on any of the big internet companies. So it's hard to judge these days which is which.
Yeah, and I wouldn't expect too much of Motherboard, because after all, they are a digital first company. That's not like the New York Times or something.
That's exactly what I'm saying, though, is that they used to be there to laud technology, and now they're saying,
Now the trend is, we were wrong. Bush.
Yeah.
Motherboard has always been fairly skeptical. So they have always been very consumer-oriented on security, privacy, things like net neutrality.
I like them.
I'm just saying they haven't always lauded technology.
No, I think it's fair. Yeah.
The article is by Lorenzo Franceschi Bicarai, and I should say, just for full disclosure, that the interview was with Dan Kieserling, Triangulation 403. And not knowing anything about these accusations, because it was several weeks ago, I didn't ask him about them. And maybe I was too much of a cheerleader, but I thought, I had heard of Project Shield for sure. We'd even talked about it, I think, on this show. So there's I go two ways with this one. I think on the one hand, on the Motherboard article, they're lambasting the CEO Cohen for things like going to Papua New Guinea and joining in a ritual dance with a native tribe. And that's one of the things Dan was saying. We do. We try to understand other cultures.
Well, but what they were lambasting him for was that he partook of a ritual that involved his body being painted black.
Yeah, but that was the ritual. Skeleton. It's not like a college kid doing blackface.
That's the problem. Was he aware of that enough?
But it's that
issue. Yeah. So that was just at worst tone deaf. The big issue was that Google was having this crisis around
the Damore
thing. Yeah. And his team apparently already was having some issues of its own around
women engineers.
Yes. Yeah. And he did not respond. He did not respond to that with alacrity.
OK.
So they were like, he doesn't really care. And then he sends a tone deaf picture.
They also published this tweet from Cohen, back from 8 amazing days in Pakistan meeting with tribal elders. I don't know. Is it bad that he's wearing a turban? I think this is exactly what you want to do. You want to find out
writes books about being out there in the world. Yeah. It's not a non-story, but it's not a non-non-story.
Here's what I will say. I think their illustrations, like the things that they're using to illustrate the problem, not all of them, they probably could have had an editor who was a little bit more judicious, mm-hmm. who questioned that a little bit more. There are very, I would think it's powerful, but I imagine many other people would be like, shrug. So things like the comments they made about their colleague Yasmin Green in terms of.
That was bad. That was
so
bad.
Things like
if that's
that,
true, that was bad. They said how she dressed inappropriately, but they didn't talk about any of the men, but they talked about how she dressed or was underdressed. When visiting, I don't remember, it was a mosque or something, somewhere where it had been inappropriate. They also report that in the women's room at Jigsaw, there's a basket with mascara and moisturizer in it, which they say is in case you cry at work. Or maybe it's just moisturizer and mascara. I don't know.
If you go to a bathroom in Google, they have an unbelievable array of supplies.
Yes.
Mouthwash.
Yeah, I know. I'm always impressed, actually.
I expect them to get Brill Cream.
You could do all your grooming in a Google bathroom. Honestly.
Yes.
I'm sure people do.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some never
do. Anyway, their cars.
I bring it up. I should point out the article. I think that if there is a toxic culture, especially toxic culture for women at Jigsaw, that's terrible. They should fix that, because after all, Jigsaw is something that Google set up to show how technology can help people. So that is a bad thing.
And then I posted Cohen's letter to the staff right below.
Oh, let me look at it, because I haven't read that yet.
Breaking.
He's frustrated and disappointed. With his team's toxic culture. I hope he's not blaming them.
The headline's a little weird.
Okay. A few hours after the story, here's the email. The details of the story have hit me hard, and I'm deeply disappointed for all of you to see our culture characterized in this way. We haven't
always a little passive, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't always gotten everything right. And as CEO, I take responsibility seriously. I'm committed to ensuring we continue and improve. In 2017, 2 years ago, he says, Jigsaw identified a number of areas where we had room for improvement, conducted an internal review, and implemented nearly all of the recommendations. Okay. On the personal note, I'm frustrated and disappointed to read about some people's personal experience in our team that fell short of our commitment to provide a positive workplace for everyone. I'm sure there are people, ex-employees of any company, including our own, who would have a tale to tell, however, you know, lopsided it is. Another former employee.
Yeah, I think they've got things to work on. There's no question about that. Yeah, they're saying it.
I don't have any reason
scandalous
to
this is.
Apologize for them. Yeah.
I think apologies. I think it's more like saying, "Oh, hey, this is an issue. How can I deal with it?" Yes, you need to acknowledge something and move on. But I also think it's good for, as a journalist reading this, or as anybody who is reading something like this, I may look at Cohen and take him with a bit more of a grain of salt.
Yeah.
And honestly, the way we treat founders in the media and just in general in the tech press, good Lord, we could probably do with more grains of salt, because there is definitely a tendency not to ask critical questions.
Now, I will say one thing, which is the reason we interviewed Dan Kiserling from Jigsaw was that Google approached us. They approached us early in June and said, we'd like to offer you our COO for an interview. And I said, yeah, let's set it up. And we did. And that interview aired or was conducted June 21st.
Because the story talks about them getting a whiff of the story. What was the date of that?
I was starting to worry. I think you were part of their campaign to
I
not
think
be
we
evil.
We were. So, because I'm looking at the email he sent out today, as you've seen the Vice story, Dan briefed you on, Dan is the guy I interviewed, a week or so ago was published. So I feel a little manipulated that this was part of a media tour to set the stage before this story came out.
Really? You talked to a PR person and you felt manipulated?
That never happens. Well, and it's true that, first of all, I have a natural aversion to PR people. I avoid talking to them all the time. But when they when they offered somebody from a group within Alphabet I thought was doing something very interesting, I did jump at it. And I didn't know this happened, was probably orchestrated to happen before the article came out. So I had no idea there was any controversy at all. And so it was a very positive interview. So I apologize. I feel like perhaps we were manipulated a little bit. I did, when I saw this story, I contacted the producer. I said, if it hasn't run, do not run it. But it already had run. So
But then that's kind of odd too.
Well, I guess
you're kind of the best thing to do,
if I had the resources, would be to call them back and say, let's do a follow-up to our interview.
That's what you would do in that situation. If it hadn't run, you'd say, hi, let's address this. And if they refused to, then I would not run it.
Yeah, but it had already run. It had run a few weeks before.
Now you can. So some things you can do
if it now, yeah.
You can do a follow-up. You can try for a follow-up. You could even, like, I know that if something happens in a situation like this, I might even put an update at the end of the story since they're so close in time. And because I have a strong suspicion I had been manipulated, I might even put an update at the bottom of the story a week after this ran.
That's a good idea. Let's do that at least and put a link.
But then
article.
If you do that, here's the if.
And you have to follow up. I understand.
Yeah, you have to give them a for their comments.
Well, in a way, this is the follow-up.
Wait, I should be a professor of journalism.
You are a professor. You are teaching me the craft, because I never studied the craft. I don't know anything about it. So I thank you.
There's a craft.
Oh, there's a craft. Okay. Oh, there's a craft. Nobody really cares. I care because what's going on?
I think that's part of being a credible reporter and not just a shill for companies and what they're after.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Well, and as Eric in our chat room points out, everybody who you're interviewing has an agenda.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Mostly just to push a book or a podcast.
Well, and when this happens, when stuff like this happens, I blame myself for not doing more reporting. Like whenever I've done an interview and then like, you know, especially like a bigger interview, not like just random. I'm like, dang it. If I had Googled this, like, or talked to some people beforehand. Okay. I Google everybody before I talk to them.
Oh, I did that. But, I didn't find any negative stuff at all. So,
right.
You know,
so yeah.
So, but anyway, I think at least by doing this, talking about it, we've kind of mentioned the issue. And
there are now six, I think the latest study was 6 PR professionals to every journalist out there, and probably more now.
Judging by the amount of email I get, I would say that's accurate.
Oh, we should talk about something that Google did. Hold on one second. Kevin Toefel says hi.
Hi, Kevin.
Okay. Well, we'll get to it. Maybe I had this horrifying Google experience.
No, let's do it now. I don't have anything pressing on the agenda.
So last month, Google on G Suite changed some security features to make things more secure. And they brought this up in an email and they sent to people and they said, hey, we're now doing something. They call it less secure accounts, which is really awkward phrasing. They were less secure apps in your Google account.
Oh.
So they introduced this because if the site does not meet their security standards, Google is going to block anyone who's trying to sign in to use your account.
That's right. And this is tied This is tied to their efforts on Gmail. And you remember where this came from?
Yes. Oh, go on.
Go ahead. Explain.
No, tell.
It was an exploit in Google Docs. That came, I can't remember if it was a malicious extension or I can't remember the exact details of it, but Google said at that time, yeah, we're going to really crack down on the kind of stuff. So here's the page that they sent you to, control access to less secure apps. And it's in a way saying to you, look, we're going to turn some stuff off. You should know ahead of time, right? Is that what the intent of it was?
So that was the intent. I looked at it and I said, okay. But then starting after they rolled this out, I have a Gmail and a G Suite account. And my Gmail account apparently because it has two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
It stopped pulling from my Gmail account.
Oh.
But it just told me there was an error. But I was still getting emails. So I was like, Google, you're confused. So I ignored it for a little while, which you should never do. But, you know, this is me. I was moving. Life was crazy. And then I dealt with it yesterday. I was like, gosh, let's dig into this error. What the heck is happening? Apparently, all of my email from my personal Gmail account that I send to my main email account was just stopped.
Hey.
And so to fix it, I had to go back.
That's ironic that G Suite decided that Gmail was insecure. One of your less secure apps, our own email product.
I don't think it was less secure. I think something they changed made it what I had to do because it's got two-factor. It wasn't
reestablish the connection using probably an app password or something like that. Right?
That is exactly what I had to do.
Yeah.
But figuring that out took forever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm like, Google's documentation is not made for humans. Their original email, not made for humans.
It's very simple. From the admin console homepage, you go to security basic settings to see security on the homepage. You might have to click more controls at the bottom. Under less secure apps, go to settings for less secure apps on the left. Select an organizational unit where you want to manage access to less secure apps. If you don't select an organizational unit, it'll apply to the entire top level organization, et cetera, et cetera. Disable access to less secure apps for all users recommended. Allow users to manage access to less secure apps. Enforce access to less secure apps for all users not recommended. On the bottom right, click save. Well, that was easy. How hard could that be?
I was thinking more of the, hey, by the way, this thing
this
we're
is gonna
implementing
break
is going to break your email.
Everything you've set up, you're going to have to go back through it. Well, this reminds me a little bit of what happened at If This Then That. Remember where they changed their API and everything broke? And I think this happens from time to time where you've got, and you see, you are smart And you do stuff, and I bet you a lot of our audience does, stuff like that, where you have one account go to another account, and you have set up systems, but they're fragile because they rely on an ecosystem that's constantly changing, especially with Google.
Oh, this is why I wrote about like API documentation and the importance of APIs and API wars. That's a fun topic.
Oh, what fun.
Yay. Okay. But that happened to me. So if you guys have that problem and you're maybe wondering if you didn't spend the 30 minutes to figure out what the heck was happening and why and how to fix it, now you sort of know.
And now it's time for our journalism segment, The Guardian. Google accused of flipping the bird at New Zealand laws after a murder. Apparently, they broke suppression orders related to a murder case of a British backpacker in Auckland. The name of the defendant was suppressed, but Google sent it out in an email. What's trending in New Zealand? Went out to thousands of people. This is an example, I think, exactly of what you just talked about, Stacey. Even Google has automated systems. They don't know what the hell's going on.
Oh, no.
Google executives met with New Zealand's justice minister in Wellington to discuss the breach and said it'll be dealt with. They also talked to Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, who is still waiting, by the way, for Marianne Williamson's call. However, when justice officials followed up with Google in March and again last week, the company said, we're not going to change anything.
Because consider this. It's New Zealand being not unlike China and Iran and other places, thinking you can build a wall around New Zealand and keep information right. out. And sorry, Kiwis, but you can't. Oh, this friggin' sunlight. You can't. And
don't worry. Nobody's watching. It's okay. Everybody listens to our shows. Poor okay. Jeff agonizes over his lighting all the time. Ugh. Earlier, Jeff didn't get involved in the previous conversation because he was setting up table lamps and floor lamps.
Because Karsten was telling me to do things, and I was trying to do things.
No, let him. It doesn't matter. And... Let Jeff be Jeff.
Oh. Just doing what works.
Let me look like crap, and then people yell at me
anyway,
on Twitter.
Yeah. No.
Can't you get a better camera?
And here's another thing. Here's another thing. Yeah, pay no attention to people yelling at Twitter on Twitter. That is the default. That's what Twitter is made for, it turns out. Oh, by the way.
We're heading for 500 different internets now.
Yes.
Right? And New Zealand thinks that they can block stuff out. And they can think that people aren't bright enough that they can go and go to, I don't know, theguardian.com and find the name of the miscreant. Right? It's called an internet. It's called living in the whole globe. And I know that New Zealand is still tender about the horrible crimes that happened there, but it's not the internet's fault. And doing things like this is not going to fix it.
These are our own domestic. These are our own domestic laws, and we do have an expectation they'll be upheld. So Google's response is disappointing. Now we need to consider what the next steps will be for New Zealand. It's not clear what New Zealand's options are. Earlier this year, they announced they were exploring how it could make Facebook and Google pay more tax on income made within the country.
So that's the other agenda going on. Everybody else, here's the other thing we got to recognize. The agendas that people have in this.
It's not just
this
name.
Journalists are not admitting their agendas that they find Google and Facebook to be competitors. And so
this is from New Zealand's government, though. This is the government affairs manager,
Ross
Young.
Yeah, they're also talking about getting more tax revenue.
Yeah, that's what he's interested in.
There's other agendas at work here.
Yeah. Stuff. Yeah, it's hard. I would say it's going to be very difficult to suppress information. News in newsrooms.
It is. It's going to be extremely difficult. And I recognize that we in the U.S. are used to having what we call the perp walk, where if you are arrested, you are not guilty of anything yet. It's the night you're arrested, but the press is alerted, and as you are walked from the precinct to the wagon to go to the jail, the press is all there to take your picture. Yeah. That is shocking in Europe. Shocking.
Well, they don't do that for every...
Only high profile.
What I'm saying is, though,
we believe here in an openness that says that we don't believe in secret arrest or arrest without publication of the name because it's a way to protect you. Right. In Europe, they believe the opposite. They believe that if you're arrested, but you're not guilty yet, then you have a right to not having your name out yet. The irony is, I would almost think it'd be the other way around, because Europe, having had its history, you'd think that openness would be a virtue there. And in the U.S., not having had that kind of history, you think, well, let's try to let, and we believe so strongly in innocent until proven guilty,
right,
we think we'd reverse that. But we believe in free speech here and openness. And so there are different cultures that occur.
And that's
there.
The and fundamental it, problem, which is that
the global internet.
The global internet, local culture. And it's a difficult balancing act. And it really doesn't, the technology doesn't lend itself to saying, okay, we're going to make sure that New Zealand isn't offended while serving the cultural norms in the rest of the world. That's almost impossible. I don't know how you do that.
There's another case this week.
Neither does Google.
But at the same time, I completely respect the desire for individual localities to preserve their culture. That's, of course, but that goes back pre-internet. That goes back to television. That goes back to American hegemony in entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, the Hollywood and all the movies we've been putting out for the last 100 years have clearly influenced culture all over the world. When I was a kid and we went to Europe in the mid-60s, you couldn't get Coca-Cola. You had to get weird, imitative drinks.
When I was in East Germany, I called it Kami-Cola.
Kami-Cola, Afri-Cola. I remember having Afri-Cola. It had cinnamon in the bottom of it. And if you if you wanted to know what the baseball scores were in the United States, you had to wait 3 days for the Herald Tribune to print them.
Yep.
And then that, so there, but with the world has changed, and we are now all connected. I think that's probably for the better, but I understand. You know, one of the effects is accents are going away. Regionalisms in the United States are going away.
And nationalism is rising.
And nationalism
because,
is rising.
Because there's a fear that there's a, you know, between the globalization and immigration, the old powers in each country are fearing the challenge they're having. And it's part not just to the internet, it's also globalization, but it's both technology-based.
Here's another example. Facebook being fined in Germany for underreporting, $2 million, which is a pretty small fine for a company as big as Facebook.
You know, in all of our lives,
stop it, Mark. You know, these things happen. $2 million, it's not a big deal. This, I think, has to do with Nazis.
This is hate speech. This is Nets Day Gay. It's too long a word even for me to say law. And there's two angles to this. One is that they're required to report, and YouTube, you will see, reported a huge greater number than Facebook did. So that looks like a variance. It looks like Facebook's scanning. But the other problem with this, which I've talked about on the show before, is that the order in which these companies do things, they tend to test something first against their community standards. And if it fails their community standards, they take it down and they're done. They move on. They're busy. They've got lots of things to have to check. But if they then didn't go to the next test and say, well, was this illegal and should we have reported it? In which case they're being asked to be the cop, right, the judge, the jury, and so on.
Well, now, wait a minute.
They're being asked to judge whether or not they should report it.
The network. Let me read this.
One more second. Right. So the issue here is that they're told to take down things that are manifestly illegal. And or obviously illegal, let's call it.
In the case,
and they're being asked to make
case,
two judgments:
hate speech or fake news.
They're being asked to make two judgments, which is, and I heard this from a Google attorney, which was really interesting. Is that one? Yes, is it illegal or not? But the second is, if it's minor illegal, the government doesn't care if you report it because it's minor illegal. The question is it obviously illegal? Is it manifestly illegal? So they also have to make a gradation judgment here, which again they're not qualified to do. This is why I'm pushing for.
Let me stop you.
Sorry, Stacey. Go ahead.
Let me stop both of you because I think you both got it wrong. But this is from CNN, so maybe CNN has it wrong. I don't know. This is what they say. The Network Enforcement Act requires social media platforms to publish reports every 6 months detailing the number of complaints of illegal content
they've received.
Well, but do you know what the number of complaints is? That's a number.
No,
now, then there's a second clause where they're required to remove hate speech and fake news. But what the German Federal Office of Justice said is that Facebook's report listed only a fraction of the complaints.
Let me try to explain that one. Because the key phrase there is illegal content again. They didn't get a complaint. You know, Herr Schmidt didn't say, I believe this is unlawful. Herr Schmidt said, bad.
Nope, they're not asking Facebook to make a determination for this particular fine. They do have the right to do that. They're saying Facebook made it difficult for its users to find the form to flag illegal content, and thus the number of complaints was lower than it should have been. It distorted a public, it had a distorted public image about the size of the illegal.
That's mixing two things here, though. One is they have a bad UI, and that's, I think that's probably right, and that's a complaint. Whether that results in an underreporting that is their fault is a different question, actually.
Well, and they're mixing that's what they're accusing them of, and that's what they fine them for. I should point out, yes, there is also the requirement to remove hate speech and fake news within 24 hours of it being flagged, and the penalties go up to $60 million. So it strikes me that the $2 million fine does make it makes sense that it's more about, though, you got to make it easier to flag. Then we'll talk about whether you're doing your job.
Stacey, I'm sorry. I wanted to finish my point before, so I want the world to know I wasn't interrupting Stacey in that case. I do in other cases, and I'm bad at that.
Twitter says you interrupt her all the time.
In that case, I was just begging to continue a nuanced point, Stacey.
I interrupt you too. Sometimes I'm just like, Stacey. Oh, I can't keep quiet.
That's what we do.
You're wrong.
No, can I just say that I encourage that? People often hit me for that as well. Because the worst, in my opinion, the worst kind of show like this is where everybody politely waits for the other person to finish. It really slows the pace down. So
yeah, over-talking is bad.
I will say sometimes, sometimes you guys do over-talk me a little bit.
Yes.
But I'm becoming much more active about, I think it's less, being the nice person that I am and assuming the best in people, I think it's because y'all have this rapport that just gets you going.
Well, you're fitting in the rapport now, baby.
I'm working at it.
Baby.
Oh, shut up, sweetheart. I was going to use a different word. I want to split the baby and say it's good for everybody to jump in and then not over talk because that is hard for somebody to listen to. You can't hear what's going on.
Right.
But and so pause if somebody has something and jumps in. But I don't want people to hold back. That's not a good talk show.
Anyway, you were saying, Stacey.
I have totally forgot what I was doing. it's
plan,
terrible that way.
My evil plan has worked. Anyway.
I didn't have the coffee before this and now I'm like.
And the main reason I brought it up is to just underscore this. Now, maybe it isn't the case of this cultural differences. In this case.
Well, here's another one that I just put up on the rundown. The Polish court, this came from Daphne Keller, who's a brilliant legal mind about intermediate liability, that a Polish court is forcing Facebook to keep content up.
Oh, yeah.
Freedom of speech includes the ability of what not to say, to be forced to speak. Is not freedom of speech. Now, we're going to get an argument here about, well, is it a public square? Is it a utility and all that? Well, it is not yet, but they're being told to keep things up. And in this country, we have those who in power in Congress and in the White House who are trying to say that Facebook and Google should be forced to keep up certain speech. At the same time, they're being told to take down other speech.
The problem is that there's so many stakeholders. There's 200 some countries. Each one has different rules, regulations, expectations.
I think the problem is really, honestly, it's what we're bemoaning, which is the fragmentation of the internet in some ways. So you've got Facebook, which is where a lot of people go to get their information and may even think of that as the internet, when in reality, it's not, or it shouldn't be. And we shouldn't.
Right.
I mean,
good point.
You can put up a website with any information you want, but we've got to figure out how to think about, I don't know if it's a monopoly, if it's network effects, or how to think about mitigating the power that platforms have to show people, to influence people, I guess. But
is that their role, right?
No.
Do we want them to actively decide what we should know and not know?
So, I have a really hard time with this because the crux of the matter is people do go to the platforms and trust for them to be like the source of certain kinds of information, right? So if you say to a restaurant, if Facebook's like, you know, I hate you, I'm never putting your stuff on here, then that restaurant might be hosed because people go looking for that kind of information on Facebook. I don't, but other people do. So I think there's,
you know,
there's both a the life as it we want it to be versus the life as it is. And we have to build rules and think about the implications of life as it is. But then we should also be trying to make life more like what we want it to be if do want it to be this open place where anybody can find information. And
so, Stacey, here's the case I think that gets to your points. And I've been talking to Claire Wardle at First Draft and others about this in my institution, is go to the health and vaccine stuff. The story on the rundown is a snippy version of this. But Facebook is trying to figure out how to deal with anti-vax stuff. They're trying to deal with health stuff. And is it their obligation to, their choices they have is to downrank. If they put up notices, does that make bad stuff more popular? Do they kill things? Do they actively put up contrary content from sources? And those are their realm of choices. And they're going to set precedents there that will get demanded in other areas like politics and government. And so, but this is a matter of health. And health, you heard me screaming about health matters. So what do we think? What do you think is the right beginning point for that discussion?
I think for something like health, so think about a public good. And I could screw myself thinking about this, but just right now, before I think this
precedents
all the way through.
Get set.
I'm thinking out loud here.
Go for it.
Public good. I think the benefits outweigh the risks of maybe going too far in one direction. So I think you should go too far in the direction of educating, given we have actual science and a public good at stake. So I think things that downgrade vaccine, anti-vaccine propaganda kind of stuff. I think promoting things or making a really valid and forceful insertion of, hey, here's what the CDC says, or here's what whatever government, wherever your IP address is from, here's what your government says about this. In the case of something else, I don't know. In like reading this Polish court thing, this was a drug. This is really fascinating because it was a nonprofit that's advocate. It's trying to prevent people from dying of drug abuse. And they warned, I guess, about using certain drugs in hot climates is bad. But maybe they didn't go so far as to say, don't do drugs. Maybe they just said, hey, don't do these drugs when it's hot. Maybe because they're realist. And people were like, nope, that violates community standards because you're advocating for drug use.
Do you think maybe this is only a temporary problem that people, I mean,
no, this is what government's for. This is democracy in action. I mean, we have these arguments all the time, not just on platforms, but we have them in public. We have them like,
bingo.
Think about your zoning laws. Think about, is it right to let a man walk down the street without a shirt on? Can a woman walk down the street without a shirt on? In some communities, yes. In others, no. I mean, the problem is we're doing it in the digital world, and the digital world's accessible outside of our insular community standards, and we're going to have to adapt to that.
So whose standards rule?
It's about
Stacey's common denominator?
Well, so two things. One, it's not a technology story. It's not a technology problem. It is a human problem. And Stacey's points are about society negotiating its norms and standards and laws to be able to handle this, right?
So the platform shouldn't do anything about it at all. They should just let us work it out.
Well,
they
the platforms should, are also they should let part us of our lead. Society.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, anti-vaxxers are not just on Facebook. That's not the only place they exist.
Amen.
Honestly, I feel like there is a little bit of a vestigial trust of anything you see in print that I think in a generation will be gone completely, right? So
may I?
Yes.
Gutenberg moment?
Yes.
When print came along, no one trusted print because it was so ill-managed, so uncontrolled. All kinds of crap appeared in print. All kinds of conspiracy appeared in print. Print was less reliable than what was known then as rumor, right? Rumor, hearing things from your friends, people you trusted and relied upon, was far more reliable than print. And it shifted over time where print gained more credibility. And right now we're trying to negotiate our worldview about where does expertise come from. And we're not used to a notion of distributed expertise. We're used to a notion of centralized expertise.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. And I feel like that's vestigial. That will wear off. We've got that left over from...
It could take literally a century.
It might have taken Gutenberg a century. I think we're moving a little faster than that.
That's contemporary.
Gutenberg took way more than a century. Because, yeah. I mean, what was that, 14 something? And then we didn't get to the Enlightenment until 17?
Yeah.
17
something? And it took a 30 years war or two, you know, so...
Here's my issue. You can't fix stupid. And
that's not true.
Yes, you can.
How do you fix stupid?
You educate.
You educate people. And yes, there are still going to be people who refuse to believe, quote,
I guess what I'm saying is,
you
can't fix people who are going to post that crap, but you can fix people who are going to read that crap.
Yes. And so, it's not media literacy. It's something different. Media literacy is media-centric. It is teaching people to be enlightened.
It's just understanding that just because you read it on a Facebook post doesn't make it true. Seems to me kind of a fundamental thing. You're not going to stop. I swear to God, I don't care what Facebook does. You're not going to stop people from writing stupid stuff on Facebook. It's just not going to happen.
But you don't have to advance it. And you can also add for other people reading it.
That's true. There is some culpability because Facebook likes to advance that stuff because that stuff enhances engagement. Both YouTube and Facebook have this problem because people love reading this stuff and they read more of it. And the algorithm says, oh, good. Okay. We feed them more stuff like this. And that is a problem. The algorithm
Quality is a very hard problem. And full disclosure is I raised money for my school from Facebook to work on a project called News QA, News Quality Aggregator, where even just for what you could identify as news sites, which is a very small corpus, you know, 15 to 30,000 sites in the U.S. How do you come up with mechanisms to judge quality and credibility among that very small corpus? Not zillions of sites, but just that.
So you've got this problem of community standards varying across the globe. You've got this problem of stupid posters, stupid readers. This is you're right. This is not going to go away right away. I have high hopes that a generation that grows up internet native will be a little smarter. I think there's already evidence that the kids who grew up with the internet are smarter about what they read. As you've said many times, it's people my age who keep posting this stupid stuff on the internet.
Yep.
So maybe there is some hope. Did we talk last week about Twitter hiding posts?
I don't think we did. So
I think it happened the day after our show. So what we did do is we showed the little snippet from President Trump on Fox talking to Maria Bartiromo about how Twitter keeps my follower count artificially low, some sort of crazy thing. And then Twitter the very next day kind of made it so maybe they for tweets belonging to political figures, verified users, and accounts with more than 100,000 followers, if the tweet violates Twitter's rules... And by the way, it's not obvious. A team of people from across the company will decide whether it's a matter of public interest. If it's not, of course, they'll just take it down. But if it is, a light gray box will appear before the tweet notifying users it's in violation, but it's going to stay available because it's part of the public
record. I think hide is the wrong verb there.
No, in fact, highlight.
It's flagging it before you see it.
Who's not going to click view? The Twitter rules about abusive behavior apply to this tweet. However, Twitter has determined it may be in the public's interest for the tweet to remain available. Click here to read it. Now, of course, on the other hand, they say it won't be showing up in search results, that kind of thing. They're going to try to slow its spread down. Nevertheless, if you're following the president and you see something like that in the president's tweet stream, who's not going to click view?
Me.
When it happens 100 times, yeah, no.
Maybe.
I refuse to follow him.
You got to read his tweets.
In my tweet deck. No, I have a column in my tweet deck. I don't bother anymore. No, I don't bother. Because I've heard it all. Well, as I said to Ari Melber about this very subject,
okay.
I hate people who repeat themselves. I hate people who repeat themselves. I hate people who repeat themselves.
All right, but
I've heard it all.
Nevertheless, he's the most powerful person in the world. I think it's important to know what he's saying, even if it's stupid or repetitive.
No.
What
no.
if he says, Stacey? Hey, just a word of warning, I'm gonna bomb Iran tomorrow. I mean, you want
to
know.
Then we'll see that in the New York Times. If my beat were to cover it, yep. I would have to have it. But it's not my beat.
I see. So you wait till the news reports it.
Yep.
Which, by the way,
there needs to be a filter.
The news loves to report the president's tweets.
I know, but I can glance at it and say, oh, this is one of those.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, okay, exactly. Screw that.
MSNBC has taken to underlining, highlighting with yellow the part of the tweet they want you to read. It's so long, they don't want to post. Yes. So they highlight it. And I'm saying, wait a minute, slow down. I want to read the whole thing.
But every now and then, sometimes I enjoy things like his Prince of Wales.
W-H-A-L-E-S.
Yeah. I was like, presidents, they're just like us.
No, they're not.
No, they're not.
Let's just all watch the parade tomorrow. We'll know. I honestly, there was an article in Vogue yesterday that says, how can you people just pretend nothing horrible is happening on the border? And just go about your daily lives. And I'm having a hard time. I'll be frank with you. It is devastating.
Having lived there and left, I'm like, oh, what do you do? What do you do?
I sent races $1,000.
I keep sending them money.
I don't know what else to do, right? I mean,
do you take to the streets?
I don't know.
Do I feel like a Germany, like maybe a German in Nazi Germany?
Yes, I kind of do. Camps.
And I honestly don't know what to do. And it's very distressing.
Well, one thing I would argue is this, if I may, and I've made my political views very clear, and I'm not going to push now, but just full disclosure is that I'm a fan of Kamala Harris. And by the way, a lot of friends have come up to me saying, oh, hey, yeah, you were.
Yeah, now she's the new flavor of the month. Yeah.
But what I say to people is, I don't care who you're for. I don't think you should wait and say, when there's one, I'll decide on that. Now is the time in a democracy to be part of the discussion and get out there. I tweeted about this today. I had about a 6-tweet string today saying, here's why I'm for her, but go after your own person. Don't wait till the end. Get in there, get involved. That's the Democrat. And somebody came in and said, well, you know, on Twitter, good old Twitter, said Warren's my first choice, but if Harris wins, I'll be crazy about her being president, and I'm all before her. And somebody else came back in and said the opposite, and there was a group hug, and that's what the discussion we need to have right now. So part of this is just get involved.
Yeah.
Push people to run for office in your districts and in your states. Get involved. And I don't mean that in the sense of, yeah, get out there and vote and do the old things. I mean that we need this national conversation. And we need to be out there, and we can't get into a point of having, of being too tired.
It's pretty discouraging. It's pretty discouraging.
It's very discouraging. Very. Stacey, if you do you do the journalist? I don't politicize. I don't write for.
Oh no, no.
For a Canada thing?
No, I'm Elizabeth Warren fan, 100%. I identify with her as a wonk. I appreciate and respect her.
She is a Harvard professor, baby. You could tell.
I have nothing against Kamala, but you know, at this moment in time, I'm like, boom, Warren. I just feel like she is everything a woman has to be respected. And, you know, thank you for putting in that effort in like, yeah. I'm inarticulate with like inspiration and joy and happiness that I see a candidate that
actually
I feel like I really can respect.
There's a number of smart. It's really unusual.
Well,
there are quite a number of smart, outspoken, well thought out candidates. Maybe that's why people are having a hard time. Yeah, I love Marianne Williamson. Do you think that's the last time we'll see her?
No,
because everyone's so excited about her. What if people vote for this because it's novel and we've just turned our elections into like a popularity contest?
And the right wing is telling people to give her money so she makes the next debates. Yang has already made the next two debates.
No, really?
Yeah.
Yang is the basic income guy. But, you know, even when he says it, I want to give everybody in the country $1,000 a month. It's like, what? Really? Does that? What?
I know.
That's it? That's your platform. Yeah. Everything will be better because the robots are coming. That's about as crazy as Marianne Williamson, who's, yep. By the way, when they asked her, what's the first thing you're going to do when you go in the White House? She said, I'm going to call the Prime Minister of New Zealand and say, what, something, you go, girl? What was she? She said some.
Well, I forget, yeah.
It was crazy. If only Saturday Night Live were still on.
Well, did you see?
They're on summer break.
No, I saw her.
I saw her. Yeah, but it's not perfect. I would love to see this skit.
Yeah.
But I
did you see the old, somebody brought up, you know, her old tweets, and they're amazing.
Well, she's exactly just what you'd expect a motivational guru. What did McKinnon say? She said, I'm going to burn sage all over the country. She did. She was, now somebody in the chat room saying she was well-spoken. She was very good expressing her ideas. That's true.
The ideas were
bonkers.
Yeah.
You know, that's America. We like bonkers things.
We love bonkers.
Plus, we have what is it? The Great Awakening. Every couple decades, we have some sort of weird bonkers moment as a country. So maybe we're due for a bonkers
how
moment.
How do we survive? I don't know.
How do we get so far off track?
Speaking of bonkers, Samsung says, "Oh, we finished the Galaxy Fold. Get ready; it's about to launch." Well,
that was a transition.
That is bonkers.
From Marianne Williamson to a Galaxy Fold.
Who's more bonkers? So Samsung.
Folding phone? Or?
Yeah, Samsung says, so one of the things they're going to do is, so remember, part of the problem was a number of journalists pulled the, what looked like a screen protector off the screen and it broke immediately. So Samsung is now stretching that protective film to wrap around the entire screen and flow into the outer bezels so you can't peel it off. There's fix number one. Fix number two, this is just, I mean, bonkers. It's re-engineered the hinge, pushing it slightly upward from the screen. So the hinge will now push the film, stretch it when the phone opens. This will make the film feel harder and more a natural part of the device rather than a detachable accessory. And it may reduce the chance of a crease developing in the middle of the screen over time. And
May reduce.
And it's $1,980. Show of hands, how many of you can't wait to buy this thing that is clearly the worst kludge ever? No.
I kind of want people, but I really want a folding phone. I want them to like succeed at this somehow.
Well, and Huawei had one, but we aren't going to see that one.
Yeah, we're not going there.
I have been playing, and I really like it, with the OnePlus 7T Pro. This just came out. And this is the funniest thing. So what I like about this screen, it's an OLED screen with no notch and no hole punch. Because, and you might say, well, that's a problem because, first of all, fingerprint. Well, they have a very good, I think, I can never remember. Is it Sonic or I think it's
ultrasonic.
Ultrasonic, right? Because it's the Samsung fingerprint reader that is optical. So the Samsung's a little slow. This one, watch this. This is super good. It really works 100% of the time.
What happens when your hands are cold or buffed, like nail filed or dry?
I don't know. I haven't tried it that way. I did pass it around our editorial meeting to see if other people could over. I think it works pretty well. And then the other issue is, of course, well, where's the selfie cam? This is my favorite part. Watch the top of the screen here. I'm going to take a picture of myself. Woo! It just
It's like those fancy TVs from the 80s.
Yes.
Fireplace.
There's a sealed little. When I first got the phone, I forgot that it did this. I said, "What's that? Is that the SIM port?" Nope. That's where the camera comes
up. Is it waterproof?
I don't think so. It also doesn't have wireless charging, but it is easily beaten any other screen I've used because it's got it's great. No notches, no nothing. It's nice.
So are there cases made for that?
I've ordered one because I don't have one right now.
No, I'm like, oh, it's so shiny.
I know.
It looks so hard to hold.
It's so slippery and glassy. I know I'm going to break it.
So this is the OnePlus 87. What is this?
OnePlus 7 Pro.
7T
Pro or 7 Pro. I can't remember. It's the new one. And very nice. Yeah. And they now they do their own version of Android. They call One, which is a very clean, simple version of Android. I like it a lot. So it's not, you know, googly pure.
They're pretty impressive. They've stuck around. I remember I went to events with them, and you know, we all talked about them at the beginning. And there was a scarcity. They've stuck it out.
I might point out, it's a Chinese company. So I don't know what the future holds for OnePlus, but they make it.
Well, really Huawei's nice in better shape.
Well, is it though?
Tell me, explain this to me, boss.
Is it though? So remember that, and this is why you want to read the tweets. The president, after meeting with President Xi at the G20, right before he stepped into North Korea, apparently they had a nice lunch. Maybe they took a selfie. I don't know. The president said, you know what? Huawei, go ahead. He's going to allow U.S. companies to sell stuff to Huawei, which means all of a sudden, I mean, this is hundreds of millions, maybe billions of dollars. Qualcomm can sell chips to them. Google can give them Android, all of this stuff. But now, today, a senior U.S. official told the Commerce Department's enforcement staff this week, Huawei should still be treated as blacklisted. So this is another case of a unilateral announcement from the president that, in fact, his own government seems to disbelieve. And wait a minute. Wasn't it a security problem, not a trade problem? John Sonderman, deputy director of the Office of Export Enforcement in the Commerce Department's Bureau of Industry and Security, said all such applications by U.S. firms to sell to Huawei should be considered on merit, flagged with language noting this party is on the entity list. See, he didn't take them off the entity list. Evaluate the associated license review policy under Part 774, presumption of denial. So the president did say I guess you could parse his tweet, which is what we've come to, as saying you can sell to Huawei as long as it's not that security stuff problem thing. So this is a very unclear guidance from the president. Huawei is also willing to continue to buy products. Huawei said, we are willing to continue to buy products from American companies, but we don't see much impact on what we're currently doing. We'll still just focus on doing our job right. I don't blame them. They're going to just design their own chips, their own OS.
Yeah.
The person familiar with the matter said the letter was the only guidance enforcement officials had received after Trump's surprise announcement on Saturday. A presumption of a denial implies strict review, and most licenses reviewed under it are not approved. So I guess it kind of matches what the president said, kind of. I don't know anymore.
Oh, we're back to politics. Why is this happening? Okay, moving right along.
I got to the fold, and I mentioned the Huawei fold, and then I mentioned, I was going to say this anyway. Huawei is back on, maybe sort of. Samsung, the Note. Are you ready for a new Galaxy Note 9? Samsung will hold its 10. Did I say 9? 10. The Note 10 launch.
Will it fold or explode?
No folding. One hopes, no exploding. It will August 7th.
Then you fold it.
August 7th. Now, I have to actually tell you guys something. That's a Wednesday. It will be at 1 p.m. Pacific time in Brooklyn. Uh-oh. I mean, our time, but it'll be in Brooklyn. So I think what we're going to do is do Windows Weekly at our normal hour, go to the Samsung event at 1 p.m. Usually Samsung's pretty quick, like they're over an hour. What I would love
Once
you to
they got
do,
rid of their dancing numbers
yeah,
and all
no
that.
More Broadway shows. I would love you guys, both of you, to join me for our coverage of the Samsung event. We'll do that as a separate special, put that out, and then we'll start Twig right after. So,
and what day is this?
This is August 7th.
Okay.
Just put that. Make a note of that. As they
put it
say,
on the calendar.
Save the date. The Note 9 was $716 on Amazon, $1,000 everywhere else. We don't know how much the Note 10 will be. We don't know much about the Note 10, actually. One rumor said that the pen could have its own camera. That might
what?
Be. Yeah.
What?
Look at this. Look at this invitation. It might kind of imply that there's a camera on the pen. I don't know. That would be cool, right? Another rumor said.
What do you use that to shoot inside your ear?
Yeah, I don't know. Or check your drains.
There's my tonsils.
The Note 10 could also have four.
I bought one of those laparoscopic cameras.
Oh, those are so much fun. I have one too.
They're so great. I've got like a $29 one.
Yeah.
They're awesome. They're USB. You, have one for
you plug them into your phone or your computer, and it puts it up on the screen, and you can put it right in your ear.
Or other, like we used it to check for leaks in the ceiling. Exactly. I've used it like playing with my kids. I mean, they're just
the
fun.
Kids love it. They say, well, let's look up your nose, mommy. Let's see your tonsils,
that
mommy.
Actually, I'm sure these things have happened.
Oh, yes. By the way, Sam, I love the Register. They're so snarky. They're talking about a new feature of Samsung. Samsung tears wrap off Bixby Marketplace. Tens of people go wild. One at the back whispers, Siri, what's Bixby?
Aren't they British? Don't you have to have a British attitude?
Yes, that is definitely. They are British snark. This is Kieran McCarthy, who's in San Francisco, but he retains some of that British snark.
Chris, that's snarky. The Boffins. And apparently at this August thing, they're talking about releasing, remember the fondue pot? The Samsung Bixby thing? You know what I'm talking about? The digital speaker that looked like a fondue pot?
Oh, yeah.
That's apparently coming out.
It looks like a kettle. Yeah, like a witch's kettle.
Yeah. So the cauldron.
The cauldron. Here it is. The Galaxy Home.
That's what it's called.
Oh, yeah.
It's got tripod legs, and it really very much looks like you might be brewing a potion in there.
Or it's blasting off from the moon.
Yeah. Turn your home into a smart home. It's a SmartThings hub. Now, you're the IoT expert, Stacey. I mean, SmartThings is a pretty good hub, right? It supports all the protocols. Samsung Bottom.
Samsung Bottom, they are linking all of their appliances and everything else into SmartThings.
Yeah. But SmartThings works with non-Samsung stuff, right?
It does. It's a little hard for it to... It's not the first choice for newbies.
Like, oh, really?
It can be kind of complex to like get things working, but you know what? There's not like there's a whole lot of easier options.
Smart things.
It's the only open choice really there is until Wink comes back and says that they're actually, till Will.i.am lets us know what he's doing with Wink.
He owns Wink?
Yeah, his company does. I don't know if he individually does, but his investment fund does.
Huh. We had a Security Now a story Steve was talking about. Let me see if I can find it, about a Chinese made kind of a funny name camera that isn't exactly the most private thing I've ever heard of. Let me see if I can.
Oribe?
Yeah.
Oribo?
Yeah.
Oribe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was not smart. So this is why. Go on.
What's the story? Fill us in. Let me see if I can find it here.
A company called VPN Mentor discovered that they could find the Oribe database all of these. They could find your password, location. Or Vibo. Thank you.
Or
Vibo. And they make like their outlet you can buy on Amazon for like $7. So it shares your name.
Location.
Wi-Fi location. Wi-Fi address, Wi-Fi password.
This is a redacted record that's publicly available, by the way, posted from the camera, including your longitude and latitude.
Latitude. But also even city and state.
Yeah.
So all of this is shared. They basically left their database open. So I look for companies, if you're super security conscious, you don't store this if you don't need it. So there's plenty of companies that don't store your like Wi-Fi password and information. But two, you know, at a minimum, you should, you know, put this behind a password. And yeah, so that's the issue there. Hold on. My dog.
Or Vibo smart home devices. Noam Rotem and Ran Lokar discovered an open database with 2 billion logs in it, usernames, email addresses, passwords, precise locations. Or Vibo claims to have 1 million users, private users, hotels, and other offerings. They contacted Or Vibo June 16th, No response. After several days, they tweeted them. No response. And the database is still online. It's a Chinese company in Shenzhen, manufactures 100 different smart homes.
As of July 2nd, it's not online anymore.
Oh, they finally got it down. Okay.
They did as of yesterday, July 2nd?
Yep. No, it's the 3rd. Yesterday.
Yesterday. So as of yesterday, it is offline.
Okay.
But before then, online.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is, guys, buy from a reputable vendor.
Yeah.
Always look to see how those vendors Google their names so you can see how they handle security issues. And honestly, you should, well, we could actually talk about this. We talked about it on our show, but the FTC also, did you see that the FTC settled with D-Link over its security practices? And I bring that up because I think we should have a baseline of security practices. Because right now, it's not like most people know how a smart home device is going to handle their information. But they really should have a baseline set of expectations. Yes.
Is there, I wonder, maybe we need a standard, maybe the NSA or somebody should set a standard.
The NSA?
Well, yeah, believe it or not, the NSA actually has some very good documents on how to secure yourself with a variety of operating systems because their national mission is to preserve our security, which includes protecting us from bad guys.
Okay. So, there are NIST standards.
NIST would be another good one, the National Institutes of Standards and Technology.
So with the, is it Oribe?
Or Vibo.
Thank you, Karsten. I'm sorry.
Or Vibo.
So with this, I would say don't just buy the cheapest device. Look up the vendor. See how they respond to security things.
Yes.
See if they do have standards already in place. And make sure that they patch if there are problems.
Yeah.
So that's one. And then switching over to this idea of creating a standard, the FTC this week settled a 2-year-old suit with D-Link, so the makers of routers and cameras. The FTC came after them in 2017 saying, hey, you have hard-coded passwords. You have some really bad stuff in here, and you're telling people that these are safe and secure. And originally, the FTC suit was thrown out for not bringing enough proof. But then they came back, I guess, with more proof, and now they settled. As part of the settlement, the FTC is making, well, it has put some rules forth for D-Link, but also they will have to, for the next 10 years, I think it's once a year, undergo a security audit. And the things that they said in the settlement could become really good precedent for, again, a baseline security standard for connected devices.
So, as you probably know, there's an epidemic of ransomware sweeping Florida cities.
Oh.
And in at least a couple of cases, I think Key Biscayne and Riviera Beach, and now Lake City, Florida, they paid out. Riviera Beach paid $600,000 in Bitcoin to the bad guys, got their data back that day. Lake City, Florida, $460,000. These are small towns. I think, you know, just tens of thousands of people. But what's interesting is that there's a League of Florida Cities that has an insurance program for ransomware. So in both all these cases, there's insurance. So it doesn't cost the city all that much money. I am very happy to say, to report, though, that the IT manager at Lake City, Florida, whose initial response to this, I wish I could find the quote, was, well, as far as we know, nobody's data was stolen, has now been fired. Thank you. Because after all, if a city is forced to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in ransomware, it's because they don't have proper security measures in place and they don't have proper backups in place. The Georgia court is the most recent victim of the same ransomware. It's the Ryuk ransomware. I haven't heard that happened yesterday. I haven't heard yet if they if they're going to pay, but it is it's the nasty out there. The Georgia court system, the Georgia Administrative Office of the Courts discovered the hack Saturday morning. Hackers used the Ryuk ransomware ransomware holding several state court systems hostage. Many court documents filed online have been inaccessible. No word yet whether they plan to pay. It's just a nonstop mess. And the reason they go after, we talked about it yesterday on Security Now, the reason they go after cities, there's several reasons. One is everything, the whole layout of the city is public knowledge. It's on the website. Who's the boss? Who's the city manager? Who's the comptroller? So it's very easy to figure out the email chain to send, the spear phishing to send. They don't generally have the budget to have decent IT. And I think this reason you're seeing it in Florida so many times now is because they do have insurance, which encourages them to pay. So it's been very lucrative. I expect to see more of those. Speaking of malware, the Chinese Border Patrol, if you cross into the border near the Xinjiang region, which is, I think it's in the western area where the local Muslim population, the Uyghurs, are being repressed. If you cross in, you will be forced to install malware on your phone that downloads your text messages, calendar entries, and phone logs, scans the device looking for 70,000 different apps, and stays on the device. Motherboard got a copy of the malware. And in fact, I guess this is a German newspaper, Süddeutsche Zeitung. They sent a reporter who crossed the border, had the same malware installed on their phone. In fact, if you want, you can download the malware from Motherboard. So why don't you install it on your phone and get back to us?
How does that, yeah.
The border crossing is from Kyrgyzstan into China. And I guess the theory is, well, what are you doing over here? What are you doing here? I think, though, it's just I'm really worried. I'm going to be going in the fall to the Middle East, to both Israel and Jordan and Oman and the United Arab Emirates. I'm actually trying to figure out what my strategy is going to be, both for going into those countries, going from Israel into Dubai, and then to top it all off, coming home.
Just buy 6 burners.
I think I have to have a burner for every country.
not to mention 2 passports.
Oh, man.
Yeah, sure you get one for the U.S. too?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
By the way, when I went to Israel not too long ago, instead of stamps, they put two little, very not pasted cards, an entry card and an exit card.
And you have to have it when you go out. So they can take it.
But right? Then you can throw it away.
Right. Yeah, Russia.
Oh, I was
Russia,
never there. Russia, I know nothing.
Russia does that too. Oh, so that there's no evidence that you were in Israel. Okay.
That's the point.
Ah, clever. It's going to be a big social media summit next week at the White House.
Ugh. 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 Okay, you tell the story first, then I'm going to go on to Jarvis.
Facebook, Google, and Twitter writes the Power Post from the Washington Post have long struggled to back allegations in Washington. They censor conservatives online, but get ready because here comes the White House social media summit. The July 11th event aims to assemble digital leaders to discuss the opportunities and challenges of today's online environment. But really who they're inviting is tech's top conservative critics in politics and media, including PragerU. We love PragerU, right? Google actually has limited the reach of some of their videos about Islam and guns, so they can't be viewed by those who have enabled restrictive modes, so schools and parents can at least keep their kids from looking at it. That apparently is evidence, proof positive, that conservatives are being blocked on the big wide internet. Heritage Foundation, the Media Research Center, Charlie Kirk, executive director of Turning Point USA. Were you invited, Jeff?
Yeah.
No, neither was I. So, some say.
So here's the thing. Folks.
Some say that Ron Wyden said there's zero evidence social media companies are biased against conservatives. I think they probably are. In a great majority of them, run by liberals, right?
I don't know. I had journalism professors who were very conservative. Yeah. Believe it or not.
Do you think evidence that Twitter or Facebook is? I mean,
this is just absurd. People, individuals have opinions, and they're allowed to. We still, for now. And
all the evidence I've seen so far is anecdotal, including President Trump saying Twitter secretly reduced his follower count.
But here's the rant. Yeah, it's fun for everybody who used to love technology to go after it. Yeah, it's fun for the left to complain about the big old companies. But beware what you play into.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because this far right is coming after, and they're going to take advantage of every bit of this, and they're going to try to force these companies to take down things that you like, to put up things that you hate, to go after them for the sake of going after them because they think they're being put upon. At the same time that you're screaming take down the fake news, every time you do that, then the people who put up the fake news or are in power are using that as an opportunity to go after the technology companies. And at the end, your internet.
Yeah.
So beware what you play into, folks. Beware.
Yeah. I mean, I don't... This is very much a strategy. And it's been a strategy that's been talked about for at least a decade of the... I don't know if it's Republicans or if it's the far right, but, you know,
and then there's
this is very frustrating.
Berkeley, California.
Yes.
The city wants to require people who sell cell phones in the city to warn consumers about a radiation risk of carrying the phone in your pocket or apparently your bra. Berkeley's Right to Know ordinance came into effect in 2016, and the court...
Right to know what?
Right to know nothing. But anyway, Berkeley's been enforcing this, and of course, the CTIA, which is the Industry Association for Cell Phones, has sued and lost in court. They sued in 2015, they sued in 2017... In 2018, the Supreme Court said, they'd send it back. Once again, the city has won in court. The city has the right to warn consumers about cell phone radiation, even though, as far as we know, there's no evidence.
Oh, science? Evidence? Let's just go for fear.
Well, let me read this to you. See, so the radiation warning message required by the city from phone retailers is, quote, "To assure safety, the federal government requires cell phones meet radio frequency exposure guidelines." So far, so good. "If you carry or use your phone in a pants or shirt pocket or tucked into a bra when the phone is on and connected to a wireless network," and why would you carry a phone that's off in your bra, I ask you, "you may exceed the federal guideline for exposure to RF radiation. Refer to the instructions in your phone or user manual for information about how to use your
phone." Why does it specify a bra?
It's very strange.
You could put it in your jock strap.
Breast cancer.
No.
Oh. Well, no, it's, yeah, and it's close to your, it's just close to your body. So your pocket and your bra, I mean, well, but yeah. Oh,
they should just say close to your body.
Yeah, that would be sufficient to, why specify?
Well, because, I mean, I stick my phone sometimes in my bra if I'm going out jogging and I don't have any pockets in my dress.
Yeah, of course, that's fine.
These are actually somewhat mutually contradictory sentences because the FCC does in fact require the cell phones meet the RF exposure guidelines, that they're not dangerous. And then the very next sentence is, well, just maybe if you carry it there, it'll exceed the guidelines, which I don't think there's any evidence that it does. But anyway, I don't know. I'm of the opinion that there is no danger. In fact, for a while, people were saying, oh, you're going to get brain cancer if you hold the phone. And in fact, the rates of brain cancer have fallen in the last 2 years.
Mind you, this is in the state of California, where if you don't know, folks, you go into almost any building anywhere, there is a sign up warning you that the building is built on property that contains carcinogens and that you're warned and you don't have to go in because it could kill you to be there. And it's devalued any warning whatsoever.
Every
building you go into is dangerous.
Yeah. Every single building you go into has a Prop 65 warning, which means nobody pays any attention to the Prop 65 warning.
It's like going to the internet in the EU and having to click
on cookies.
Yeah.
Cookies.
Cookies, cancer. Cookies, cancer. Cookies, cancer. Okay.
I mean, this is a good example, though, because, I mean, who would vote against that proposition? California voters were presented with a proposition that said, well, if there's chemicals known to cause cancer in an area, shouldn't there be a warning sign? Well, of course there should be. But
this is the problem with the verb could.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of chemicals cause cancer.
Sunlight causes cancer. Every time you go outside.
Lots of problems.
Yeah.
It should tell you not to go outside because light causes cancer.
Okay. Should we do a change log here? Let's do a change log. We need something.
Do we have stuff for the change log?
We didn't last week. We do now, as the trumpeters have indicated.
Trumpet.
Google has quietly launched a developer website for Fuchsia OS. Sooner than you expected, you'll be able to develop. It's fuchsia.dev. And it's a lot of white space, okay? But here's the start here button. Here we go. Code of conduct glossary. Getting started. Everything you need to get started with Fuchsia. Sudo apt-get install, build essential, got it, curl, got it, git, got it, Python, got it, unzip, got it. Well, what else do I need? Oh, then you have to go and get the source code and download and build it and then boot it or run it in QEMU, the emulator, and then you can explore Fuchsia. Apparently has a couple of commands you can use. Fortune to get your fortune cookie and shut down. Fortune, help, and shut down are the three commands they've documented. Oh, and roll dice. You can roll dice. So anyway, that's a big deal, right? We've been talking about this new operating system from Google for some time. It's still not clear. I'm not sure what it's for. Is it a phone operating system? Is it?
It's an everything operating system.
Yeah, I thought it was for everything.
Okay. What's a phone? What's a laptop?
More computing everywhere.
Everywhere. The Pixel C, now you still use your Pixel C?
I don't use it, but I have it. And yeah.
Cuddles it at night and would like it to be back.
Yeah. I loved the Pixel C. I gave it away.
My Nexus 7 is what I want.
I miss that too. Mine is really good.
Boy, I miss my Nexus 7.
Super annuated. I still have it, but it's hard to keep it charged. Remember, last week we talked about the fact that the evidence was strong. Google was not going to do tablets. Now, according to 9 to 5 Google, the Pixel C did not receive a July patch, security patch, when other Pixel devices did. Actually, it was Android Police that noticed this. And according to the update schedule help page, there is no guarantee Pixel phones and tablets will get security updates after 18 months. And, of course, the Pixel C came out in 2015, hasn't been sold in 2 years. So if you have a Pixel C,
you're unsecure.
You can still use it. Just be careful. Be a little careful. There is a July security patch. It's coming out, and among other things, actually, I'm excited because apparently the Samsung version of it on the S10 is adding night mode to the Samsung camera. The preliminary shots I've seen look really good. But also an improved OK Google detection. That's if you have a Pixel 3, 3A, or even a Pixel 2.
Woohoo!
Bootloader bugs in the Pixel 3 will be patched. Better music detection. Do you guys ever use that where it puts on the front of the phone?
Oh, yeah. I use it all the time.
I think it's so cool. You know, there's a log of all the songs that phone's heard.
Yeah, well, they do it for most of it's actually from a database that runs locally
on
the
phone. Yeah, it's like 100,000 song database. However,
it's kind of neat.
They don't say anything about whether that log of all the things you've heard is sent back to Google. We don't know if that's the case.
You could have really embarrassing taste, you know.
No, it's not my fault.
Then I would just argue it was playing in the
restaurant. Yeah. Google Lens, if you come to San Francisco, besides wearing flowers in your hair, you might want to bring your Google phone and your Google Lens, because Westcover, which is a San Francisco-based startup, has built a catalog of local artists, and it's teaming up with Lens so that when you point your camera at an artwork in San Francisco, it'll recognize it and it'll tell you all about it. Apparently, 50,000 images of unique art and design from 6,000 local brands and independent artists are in the database. So, pretty cool.
Who paid for that?
Yeah, I don't know. Westcover, maybe. I don't know. They curated it. I guess. So here's the tweet. If you love the chair at the Ace Hotel, you just point Google Lens at it. It'll tell you where you can get one. Not much use if you're not in San Francisco. Google has patented a foldable phone. Patents don't always tell you much because, you know, maybe they're just making it. But it looks kind of like a book. It's got a round binding. It's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pages. It's a foldable smartphone with multiple pages.
So it's a book.
Yeah, it's a book, but each page is a display.
Which means you could go back and forth a little bit.
Yeah. They're held together by a book-like spine. The back, where the spine is, that's where the battery, processor, and camera are. I don't think they're going to make this, but they patented it. That's the problem with patents. Companies these days patent whatever they can. The new Google Maps will have transit updates. I really like this. I hope this is going to be rolled out all over the world, so you'll know when the train is on its way or even the bus, live traffic delays and so forth. Now, this data is funny because this data is, you know, many cities and municipalities gather this data, but also many cities and municipalities want to keep it to themselves, even though it's the taxpayers' data because they've got their app they want. And so sometimes it's hard for Google and others to get this kind of information. In this case, they're going to crowdsource it. So if you're in Tokyo, you'll be able to see how many people are in the Shibuya station. By the way, there's a little warning at 9:40 a.m. The trains are usually standing room only. If you're going to Shibuya to Shinjuku, I've been on that train. That's a fun little subway. Boy, I love
down in the in my numbers related is the most crowded subway lines, which Google now knows.
Oh, Google knows. And of course, 4th of July, Independence Day, is tomorrow. If you search for fireworks, I want you to do this tomorrow on your phone, on your map.
You can do it right now.
Can you do it right now?
You can do it right now on that computer you're looking at.
Baby, you're a firework. Let's do it. I'm going to go to google.com. You've heard of that, right? It's this new site where you can find stuff. Fireworks. That's it? Do I have to say near me? Let's see.
Anything with fireworks in it.
Oh, look. There's fireworks in the search results. That's good. That's fun. I like that. By the way, I can buy Phantom fireworks, TNT fireworks, right here. In Petaluma.
Please don't. Did you see the annual Washington demonstration of what fireworks can blow up if you do them wrong?
No.
On my Twitter feed, I retweeted a great post from, it just said winner, from the Washington Post. It's worth going to, if you can find it.
I'm going to your Twitter stream. This is you, right?
Yeah.
That is the real Jeff Jarvis.
Leo, it's night mode. You know how I hate night mode. What are you doing with night mode on my Twitter feed?
Twitter now has night mode. Sorry, Jeff.
I don't want
night mode. I use night mode.
Sorry, Jeff. I like it dark.
What's wrong with night mode?
I like it like my coffee.
I hate night mode.
I like it dark.
This is like 85 years old. Where are you?
Where is your tweet, my friend? Where am I?
Isn't it under retweets and tweets and replies or something?
Oh,
hold on, let me see.
I don't know. Tweets and replies, what's that? I don't understand.
Oh, that's hurting me.
I don't understand how Twitter works. Tweets and replies. Oh, here it is.
Hell. If you go to Twitter search and look under my name and look for winner, that'll know on Twitter. Twitter search. This is not going to be worth it now, of course.
Okay.
No.
First, I'll look for your name and then what?
I think my one word retweet was winner.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Does Twitter search work like that?
If you go to advanced search.
Oh, you didn't tell
you
me that.
You find the word winner.
The winner in local mobile would be the one who knows what's right around
Jeff
here.
Jeff Jarvis.
This is a 2010 tweet. It came up with a tweet from 2010.
No, never mind.
I'm excited because I am going to a 4th of July party.
I found it.
Good.
It's not in dark mode because Karsten's a...
Thank you, Karsten. Good work. This video is worth it.
Okay, go full screen and play the sound. Okay. Hold on. This is from the Washington Post.
Every year, the government demonstrates what you shouldn't do with fireworks.
Do not set your friend's dress on fire. Do not put it in your hand. Oh my God! Do not.
Yes.
Do not put it on your head. Do not look into the firework. This is great. They have to do it more than once. Oh my God! There's a watermelon being blown up.
We use the watermelon a lot, but it's worth it.
Oh, it's always good.
How many people are going to go and try to blow up watermelons now?
Oh, come on.
Me? I'm like, oh, that looks like awesome.
So it blew up good. Yeah. Okay, so they take a bunch of dummies, mannequins. Five firework deaths in 2018. Five doesn't seem like that big a number. Oh, he set his sister on fire. He set his sister on fire, and of course, because she's made of plastic, she's melting.
She melts. So I will say two things. One, this year, my 4th of July party, I am going to, we'll have a hand surgeon there, which I think is awesome.
Case of any finger loss.
Just have it. I mean, like, that's kind of a sucky job to have on the 4th of July, but okay. And then two, when I was growing up in Houston, where we did fun things like actually tip cows, I had a friend who decided to put a firework on his head and launch it at another friend.
Good Lord. And
these were people who were, you know, 16 or 17. So never underestimate the stupidity of, I'm going to go with boys, teenage boys in particular.
Yeah. I'm not going to complain. You're right.
It's possible. It never occurred to me to, like, put a firecracker, a Roman candle on my head and, you know.
Jesus.
Yeah, I'm surprised that that person's still alive.
By the way, if you do go to Google.com right now, you will get a chance to play the best baseball game ever with featuring
mustard,
condiments, and picnic items. And I'm now leading 5-0 because apparently I cannot fail. I just hit an 833-foot home run. This is how games should be, that no matter how bad you are, Strike. That's my first strike. Now that you're watching.
Yes, pickles are really bad at baseball. We do that.
I believe that's celery.
Is it a pickle?
Oh. No. Who would have celery?
Oh, the curveball got me out.
That does look
like celery.
Why would you eat celery on a holiday?
Oh, it's delicious. It makes a lot of celery. Crudité
on holidays. There you go. Celery got its revenge with an 845-foot arm. It's a solo homer. Here, popcorn. Let's see how popcorn's going to do. Another home run. This is like the home run derby. 600 feet. I had a bases loaded home run when you weren't looking, unfortunately. Corn dog.
Corn dog.
Another home run.
Home run.
This is the best game ever. A lefty.
Uh-oh. Lemonade. Lemonade lefty.
Oh.
I was able to swing twice at one curveball and hit it the second time. Timing is important to the curveball. Lemonade lefty. Now here's
Grapeade.
Grapeade. See, even if you hit it right to the first baseman, you get a hit. Green apple. I'm sorry. Why am I doing this, you might ask?
I don't know, but it's mesmerizing.
Because that's the Google changelog. How refreshing was that? How about this? The Pentagon has a laser, this is according to the MIT Technology Review, that can identify people from a distance. It turns out your heartbeat is unique. It's just like your fingerprint. Mm-hmm. So even as far as 200 feet away, this laser can identify you, not from your face, but from your heartbeat.
But if you're wearing a thick sweater, it won't.
Oh, thank God. It works, so if you're it works in a through global shirt warming, and jacket, but not a sweater.
It works through, I think, certain types of
thicker
shirts.
Clothing, it doesn't work.
Unless you have your phone in your pocket and it blocks it.
Ah.
And
saves
you.
It's just,
this is why you wear it in your bra, actually.
Yeah. All right. Actually, I just read an article. It was a little bit nerve-wracking. This is also for people who are planning to travel. More and more now, we are seeing face recognition. And it looks like face recognition is going to be coming to the airport near you soon. American and Delta and others. And it was an article about face recognition. And from Wired, I opted out of face recognition at the airport. It wasn't easy. And this is, to me, this picture is the challenge.
Well, what I don't want to know is how do they know? Oh, that. Yeah, I do. I've done that. It's not face recognition. It's face recording,
that's
I think.
The
no.
That's
so when you get on the plane at a Delta Airlines,
right,
you have the choice and you're told you have the choice. It says Delta says only 2% of customers opt out of face recognition. What happens is you walk up,
you
instead of having to pull out a passport or any identification, they match your face to an existing Customs and Border Patrol database of visas and passports. And he said, in the article, is it a he? Ali Funk, I don't know. He or she said, probably she, right?
Did you say they?
Maybe a they. I don't know what your pronoun is, Ali.
That's why I was just saying default to they.
They is good, even though it's completely ungrammatical. So in order to get, first of all, they had to know. Sorry, I'm just old. You can't expect me to change a lifetime of habits in a minute.
We can, Leo. We can ask you to do that.
Okay. They said, I'm going to pretend Ali is three people. They said that, first of all, you had to know that you could turn it down. And then you have to go over to the desk, and then you have to say, I don't want to use that. And then, of course, they're going to double scrutinize you, right?
It wasn't clear to me, because if you have to go to the desk or if you can just turn it down. So this person had to go to the desk because they didn't know if they could opt out or how to opt out. So I wasn't sure if she or they just had to go. I know.
They said their recent experience suggests that they're incentivizing travelers to have their face scanned and disincentivizing them to sidestep the tech by not clearly communicating the alternative options.
Right. Right. But that still leaves it up in the air. It's like, now that I know that someone is able to do this just by saying, hey, scan my passport. Right. Is it possible for me to go through and just be like, I'm going to opt out of facial recognition. Please scan my passport. Yeah.
I mean, the problem is not so much that they're using face recognition, although that there are problems associated with that, but that, are they collecting images as well and storing them in a database? And this is the real problem, because
the real issue, or another issue, well, I'm not going to say which is real. That is a valid question you're asking, is that the database is made up of government data that has now been shared with the airlines, and nobody opted into that.
Yeah.
So and remember, this is also a database operated by the Customs and Border Control or Border Protection
CBP,
Agency,
CBP, yeah,
which was hacked recently from one of their third parties. So all their biometric data. So there's a lot of things where you're kind of like, man, y'all, is this the best idea? Is this the best way to implement something like this? No.
I signed up for Clear, and they do fingerprint iris, and I love it.
Yeah, but that you signed up for that. That's totally voluntary. That is also at the TSA security points.
Yes, that's right. So I'm going to be.
It's not boarding the plane.
No, that's right.
Anyway,
okay.
Blah.
Well, I think the issue really is this is going to become universal. You're going to be everywhere you go. You're going to be scanned.
Except in Oakland and San Francisco.
San Francisco, it's illegal. In San Francisco and another municipality recently, like Somerville, Mass. Or somewhere recently, forbid.
I think Oakland did some facial recognition.
Good. Intel's getting out of the 5G smartphone market, and as a result, they are auctioning off their massive collection of patents, 8,500 in all.
It seems rather final.
Yeah, that's it. We're done. They are so happy to get
this
out of that
phone
business.
Thing. It's over.
They were so happy. You know what? They were waiting. They were watching to see what Apple and Qualcomm did, And as soon as Apple dropped their lawsuit against Qualcomm, meaning they could use Qualcomm's chips because they had been pressuring Intel, they said, Intel, you've got to develop 5G radios.
Oh.
As soon as Apple said they have a 5-year deal with Qualcomm, Intel said, we're out of it. We're done.
We're done.
And just in case Apple might try to come back to them, they're selling off the patents. So what do you...
Didn't Intel bought Infineon way back in...
Oh, they have a lot. 8,500. That's a lot of patents.
Well, no, I'm just thinking they spent money trying to get here. And, man, Intel just really sucks at mobile.
Who buys them? Huawei?
Oh, well, there's lots of people. But the sad thing is it could just, well, be a patent troll. I mean, Qualcomm.
Yeah.
Some have even said Qualcomm has two businesses. One is making chips and radios. The other one is collecting intellectual property and suing people. I'm not sure I agree with that, but that is certainly one point of view. And certainly anybody who bought these patents might be buying them, perhaps because they just want to license them, or perhaps because it's an opportunity to go after Apple and everybody else. I don't know.
Apple could buy them and use them as some sort of leverage against Qualcomm in patent negotiations or in licensing negotiations.
And Google in the past has done this, which is buy the patents and then say, we're not going to, this is defensive. We're buying them. We're not going to pursue them. Go ahead, use them. And that I admire. I think that's right on. That's a good strategy. Should we declare our digital independence on the 4th and 5th? Hashtag social media strike. Larry Sanger blog post. We, the strikers, urge the global developer community to perfect a new system of decentralized social media. This strike will show the world, big tech corporations, governments, developers, and social media users is a massive demand for a system in which each of us individually owns our own data. Social media services stop acting as silos. I agree with all this. Compete to create the best user experience and have a standard set of protocols and standards. I love all
this. I almost left a comment on this, but I decided not to be snarky. Just saying, I'll miss the five of you. See you on Saturday.
I'm in, man. You're not going to see me on social media. You pretty much don't anyway, but I don't have Facebook. I don't have Instagram. I have a Twitter account, but it's just more like because I didn't want to delete it.
It's because that's where you talk to Jeff and I.
Have I ever tweeted you?
Yes, once.
Really?
I think so.
You must have been drunk.
Oh, it was so memorable.
I feel like we've had, and I know Jeff and I tweet every now and then at each other.
Sometimes I'll see something and I'll retweet it or I'll say, yeah, just to show that I'm not, a complete curmudgeon. Finally, some punishment for Equifax, except it's not the punishment I would like to see. The Equifax CIO knew about the Equifax breach. Of course, he's the chief information officer long before the public did, decided he was going to dump his stock. And as a result, avoided, I think, $17 million in losses. No, I'm sorry, not even that much. $117,000 in losses and gained $480,000.
But he wasn't the only one. There was a CFO did the same thing.
There might be more. I'm not saying this is the last. Jun Ying got 4 months. He's going to jail. He got 4 months. And he has to pay back all the money he made. Insider trading, 4 months in prison, year of supervised release, $55,000 fine in order to pay $117,000 and $117,000. No, $117,000 and $117,000, which is a very strange fine. I guess because I don't know. Maybe that's how much he made or saved or didn't lose. Actually, I think that's what it is.
Like, good on that. There are other executives did the exact same thing, so it better not just be the CIO.
I hope they all get it, baby. Still, I think there should be punishment for just losing that data.
Yes.
That we're not going to see.
Well, that's the point,
That we're not going to see. Insider trading, you can't do that in this country. He got...
Oh, anyway,
Stewart went to jail for it.
She got more time than he got.
Yeah.
Martha Stewart, she was in a lot longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about that? Anything else you want to talk about before I...
What did you think? What has your world been as it roiled feathers that Microsoft is going to kill books?
Yeah, we've been talking about it. They're doing it in the best possible way. They're paying, first of all, not many people took advantage of Microsoft's bookstore. You used Edge, their browser. I mean, that wasn't the best way to read a book for anybody. However, they've decided as of the 2nd of July, yesterday, I think, to turn the server off, which means because it's copy protected, those ebooks will no longer work. They're refunding every penny. Here's the bigger issue. If you have annotations... those will be lost, but they said they're going to pay you an extra $25 if you had annotations.
Oy. If you're a researcher, you know, a professor, a student.
Potentially bad, yeah.
I mean, would there have been a technical
yes
alternative?
Yes.
Thank you.
Not for Microsoft, but for you, the user.
Ah.
And it might prompt people to think about all of the content they have that's copy protected, the TV shows, the movies, the books that they've bought from various vendors. It's copy protected. If the vendor decides no longer to support it, those will disappear from your library. Your library is gone. So maybe now's the time to download those and take the copy protection out, in which case they'll continue to work. Now, we had a long conversation on Twitter on Sunday about whether that was legal. And one panelist said it was, one said it wasn't. It's not clear. You're making a copy for archival purposes. That's legal, sort of. The DMCA says you can't reverse engineer copy protection. That's illegal, sort of.
It's legal to make a copy, but it's illegal to break the
DMCA. You can't read it.
Yes. You can copy it, but you can't. Yeah, you can't cut it.
And then from a purely pragmatic point of view, what are they going to? They're not going to throw you in jail for doing that, especially if you bought the book and they turned off the server. So I think you could find a way.
Oh, we talked about Twitter and Trump's tweets.
Yes.
And now there is breaking news happening.
Oh,
this morning.
Yes.
So this was only sort of breaking.
It's just in.
Oh, no, this was just in, just updated. The Justice Department is now looking at one of Trump's tweets, and based on the fact that Trump is saying that it is fake news, that the Commerce Department will stop printing the census.
Oh, yeah.
Without the citizenship question.
So he can't make up his mind. So 2 days ago, he said, no, we're going to go forward. He lost in the Supreme Court.
Right.
2 days ago, he said, no, we're going to pursue this. Yesterday, he said, no, we're not going to. Today he tweeted, yes, we are.
And now the
and this is why you have to read the tweets.
And now they're like, okay, we're trying to figure out how to do this.
Can you find me a tank to go stand in front of, please?
yes, actually.
There'll be tanks.
They're moving through the streets of
D.C. Washington.
Go right now. Okay. What? Something is happening. Oh, I see. Okay. Is it time to talk about...
Yeah, we're going to do our things, but just one little question. I mean, I think it's going to be now every president from now on will be making pronouncements on Twitter. Yes, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is that the future of direct communication?
I don't think it's a bad thing to have a direct line of communication on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I think most presidents, hopefully going forward after this, will be more measured in. Less
Obama tweeted, like, yeah,
he did, but no one was ever when Obama tweeted. You felt like Obama probably spent 20 seconds thinking about that tweet, if not a lot more time before he actually hit the button.
Yeah,
and
well, that's
so
just
I think
personality.
Yes,
I never got the impression that those were really Obama's tweets, though. That seemed
only the ones that were team. Signed by more him.
Right. In fact, they had a protocol. Right.
Yeah.
Where you had to sign them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they thought ahead about, like, what does it mean to have a tweet that says it's from POTUS? Is it really from POTUS? If so, we should probably tell people that this is an actual POTUS tweet. So they viewed it less as a way to reach out to constituents or people, just the citizenry, which I don't think is a negative way to use something like Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. I think the issue comes when you don't use it judiciously.
So apparently the fake news is now making fakes of Donald Trump saying we're not going to pursue it because I saw it clearly on video. And now he's saying, no, that's fake. So they're going to move forward. I can't even read his tweets because they're so offensive. For instance, many of these illegal aliens are living far better now than where they were. Is so incredibly offensive to me.
Awful.
I don't even know where to start. So
I would love for Twitter to say, you know, make the gray box
fact
and
check.
Then also put a fact check of the photos that we
fact
currently
check.
Have.
Yeah, fact check. And by the way, they're not illegal. Mm-hmm. They're seeking asylum, which is legal.
Yeah. Okay. Things not darkness.
Yeah, let's.
Somebody hungry or something? I thought you had. No, I got right before you came on.
I gotta remind everybody real quickly that we would love it if you would subscribe to this show. Do we have a recording of this, or do I do this live on this show? The so-called Twit House ad.
I believe you do it live on the show
because I have recorded this as well.
Yes.
We truly appreciate you listening to this podcast. Every day, it takes a team of hosts, producers, editors, engineers, and support staff to get our content to you. And by the way,
not to mention friends and family.
Friends and family. Well, you're in the host category.
Oh.
As you know, our podcasts are free and ad supported. So the easiest thing you can do to help our network is to subscribe to this show and all your favorite Twit podcasts. Subscribing now means you'll get each new episode the moment it publishes. Thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast application or visit twit.tv/subscribe. This concludes today's house ad. I never liked reading PSAs on the radio either.
You could be more friendly. You could be like, hey, guys, if you love the show, this is how we make money.
You know, I say this at the end of every show. Subscriptions doesn't make us money, but it does help us by getting more consistent downloads. That's what we really want.
You know, you get this for free.
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't have ads.
Subscribe.
The least you can do for this 2 hours of
free content,
whatever you want to call it,
is subscribe.
Is subscribe to it and get more of it.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
You don't ask much. That's all we ask.
Yeah.
F and subscribe,
Jeff, huh? Yeah, F and subscribe. Thank you. Take my ad out and leave that one in. That's good. F and subscribe. Stacey, do you have a pick this week?
I sort of do. I know you wanted me to make boomerangs my pick, but I was going to do...
Before the show, Stacey was talking about these frozen fake Australian pies. They're made in Australia called boomerangs, which she loves. Like
they're delicious. Boomerang. And it's hard to find delicious frozen foods.
Hand pies. Do you micro them or do you put them in your fine June oven?
You can do either, or you can do a hybrid. I just microwave them because I've got things
You're
to
in
do.
A hurry.
I think the June tweets. Says, this is below me.
Oh,
I'm a $15,000 oven. I don't do this.
Oh, no, now it's... Oh, you guys, though, the June with the tariffs... Wow.
Yes.
They now have a $5.99 version, but I just got an email saying as of July 1st that because of tariff concerns, they are raising the price by $100. Oh, so that is happening in action. But
which doesn't make me feel better because I paid $1,500.
You know what? I love my June so much. I don't even care that I paid double the price it is or triple the price it is now.
That
and now
is
I'm like,
such impressive cognitive dissonance. That is I think you call that maturity, don't you, Leo?
Yeah.
That's really impressive.
Mature. Yeah.
I love it. There's nothing else I can do with it, and it still makes me happy. So I'm like, I paid
oven.
More, but that's
it's
okay.
An Android, Android-based toaster oven, convection oven, and it's actually quite good. I love it. I paid a little too much for it, but I think it's worth $500 or $600 bucks. Absolutely.
Easily. Okay. So today's toy, I haven't put it in my car yet, but one of my awesome people... And he may even be listening. Thank you, John.
That looks like a face.
It doesn't. It is the Android
upside
Auto.
Down.
I want that. Here.
I want it too.
They haven't invited me yet.
What is it?
They didn't invite me either.
Is it
so
from
this
Amazon?
Is the Android. I keep saying Android. I'm sorry. It's the Echo Auto.
They teased this
a year ago. Almost.
A year ago. Oh, so they finally it's out.
Yes.
So, Echo Auto, add you know who to your car. Take you know who on the road. It's $24.99, so it's not expensive. Have you set it up yet?
No, I actually got it on Friday and I didn't set it up yet, but I'm showing it to you now. Next week, I'll tell you how it works, but I can tell you it's going to let me play my music.
Nice.
Yay. It doesn't work with certain cars. So if you go to the website, I'm going to put it in my Tesla, so that's fine. It does work on Teslas. It gives me local search, local traffic, news, podcasts, weather.
So I see two wires. So one is obviously power. Do you then have to connect it to the aux jack on your car?
Yes.
Okay.
Here's my auxiliary.
But your Tesla doesn't have an aux jack.
Well, then I just tie it into this.
Really?
So it's not Bluetooth. Oh, but you could use a USB cable. I get it.
USB cable. Okay. And it's USB to micro USB, so that's what you need to know there.
Will the Tesla be smart enough to recognize that that's a source of audio?
We're going to see.
We'll find out.
And there was something else I was going to tell you about it, but now I've forgotten.
So you can ask for maps, and if the car's smart enough...
It won't work. So it doesn't work well. It doesn't play nicely with Android Auto or with Apple CarPlay.
Oh.
That's the other thing you need to know.
Oh. Well, you don't really need it if you've got Android Auto, right? Or if
right.
you've got Siri or Google Assistant in there, you don't really need...
Right. And I don't have that. So I'm like very excited to see what happens.
Yeah, it's funny because Tesla, as high tech as it is, has its own, you know, entertainment navigation system, which is fine. I think it's fine. I'm used to it. But it would be nice to have a little bit better voice assistant. It's not a very good voice assistant.
Yeah, well, I just constantly have questions that I'm used to just asking either Google or Amazon in my house. Yeah. And yeah.
Interesting. You know, my Tesla is going back to the company in about 2 weeks.
Oh.
Yeah.
The lease. Oh, so what are you buying?
Lease is out on the 22nd. Nothing.
What?
You saw we had no ads. I can't afford a car. I'm bicycling from now on.
Scootering in.
We already have a Chevy Bolt, which is Chevy's all-electric, and it's quite nice. It was a lot less expensive than a Tesla. So I'll be driving Lisa's internal combustion car.
Ice car
for the next year and a half till that lease runs out. And then at some point after that, I'm going to figure out what I'm going to get.
I was hoping Carson would also become your chauffeur with a nice cap on.
I have a cap for him. He refuses to wear it. I don't understand. Huh.
It's because he went to Harvard.
Just take your Segway.
I'm going to segue in. I do have a Segway.
How many miles from the office are you?
Only two. I can walk.
Oh, you could segue in. Oh, you really could segue in.
I could walk. The problem is it's not an attractive walk. There's a lot of traffic and there's no sidewalk. It's one of those things.
There's a freeway between,
it's
right?
It's sad. Yeah, it's really sad that communities don't have to require sidewalks, for crying out loud, everywhere. Because I would love to walk, but I don't want to walk in traffic. So thank you. That's a good pick. I'm glad to hear it's here. You haven't gotten yours yet, though, Carson, huh? You applied for an invite, but no word.
I applied for an invite like the first day.
It's been so long, I don't even remember if I did or not.
A bunch of people are getting them.
How did they let you know, Stacey? Was it an email?
Yeah, it's an email invite. But it wasn't to me. It was to one of my listeners, and they got it for me.
Oh, wasn't that nice of them?
That's why I said, thanks, John.
I get it now.
When was the last time we had this kind of... Sorry, Stacey.
Oh, that's okay.
When was the last time we had this kind of scarcity rollout?
Amazon's always done it.
They did it with the Echo. They did it with the Look.
I know, but it's kind of over, folks.
Everything.
I think they're doing it to test how people use it and also to test like audience before they make a bunch of them. It's not a dumb idea.
It's a gimmick. Like OnePlus. We were talking about OnePlus earlier, right? That was their whole shtick at the beginning.
It's a marketing gimmick, yeah.
Right, it's a marketing gimmick. Apple and they'll really have so many phones. Amazon, get past it. People want your thing, sell them your thing.
Maybe they've got us all in a blacklist where they're not giving us it until later. Dun, dun, dun.
Jeff, do you have a numero?
Well, kind of, because my real number this week is 15, which is the age of Coco Gauff, because I was mesmerized watching her. Win in Wimbledon.
She's a tennis player.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. 15 years old, beat Venus Williams in the first round after a wild card, and then beat Rybakova.
It was kind of neat because she grew up idolizing Venus.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that was cool.
Really incredibly poised, incredibly graceful. And after beating Venus, came over and said, I'm only here because of you.
Yeah.
You know, you're my hero. Thank you.
Isn't that great?
And she'd met Venus before because they both work in Delray, Florida, but said, I never had the courage to say it before. Just a sweetheart. Smart in her play. Brilliant. I'm not a good, strategian in tennis, but even I can see how smart her play is. powerful, just amazing to watch. It's really exciting to watch a new star who keeps, you know, going on the rise. You may be witnessing the next Venus and Serena, or the next Roger. I'm going to say Fiedler. the next conductor of the Boston Pops Orchestra
the
is
great
there.
Roger Fiedler.
Anyway.
Federer.
We're big Fed fans in this house.
Nice.
So anyway, it was just great. So that's what I did. I didn't go looking for my number, but I have one, which I mentioned already, which is Google now knows the most crowded subway lines. I think every subway rider will think that theirs is the most crowded subway line.
The most crowded?
Buenos Aires, the Urquiza line. Doesn't have any numbers, unfortunately. Sao Paulo, line 11, the Coral. Buenos Aires, line A. Sao Paulo, gets in another one, line 8. Paris, line 13. Buenos Aires, line C. Tokyo, which I think everyone would have presumed because they have the shovers.
They have the shovers that push in the line.
Sao Paulo again, line 9. Tokyo again. And then New York coming in at number 10 with the L line. And the L line is the one that goes to Google's headquarters in New York that they all get pissed off about.
Oh.
That could have led to this entire thing.
The Chelsea Market, which is, by the way, where Jigsaw is.
Exactly.
Yeah. Come full circle. My pick of the week is not a pick, but a warning. Do not blindly follow Google Maps. Dozens of drivers did on the way to the Denver airport. They were rerouted through a muddy field where they got stuck. A crash on Peña Boulevard in Denver choked off access to DIA on Sunday. Google Maps suggested a detour. CNN talked to one Connie Monsees. She said, I thought maybe there's a detour. It pulled it up on Google Maps. It gave me a detour that was half the time, so I took the exit down to where they told me to. She probably missed this sign, the shotgunned and fallen over sign that said road closed.
She said, this is a Seinfeld episode for the modern age.
I know. I was given confidence because there were all these about 100 other cars in front of me. Unfortunately, a couple of the cars in front got stuck in the mud. And since only one car at a time could pass through, everybody else was stuck behind those. The question is, why did Google send us out there to begin with? There was no turning back once you got out there. She did have a four-wheel drive and was able to get through. And in fact, she has a Santa Fe. She picked up a number of people, even the passenger of an Uber that was also stuck in the mud on the way to DIA.
Yeah, but was it faster?
Well, look at these people. That's
they're
the best,
all taking pictures of themselves.
That's the best shot I ever saw.
This is just the best.
Google took us through this field. So just a word of warning. As Google says, use your common sense when following directions from a computer.
Nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this episode of This Week in Google. I do thank you for listening and do invite you to subscribe because each week it's fun. Thanks to Stacey Higginbotham, who joins us every week from the Stacey on IoT website, stacyonIoT.com, and of course the IoT podcast with Kevin Toefel. Are you loving Seattle? Are you loving the weather?
I do. It's gray and cloudy today, but it's so far been kind of awesome.
Because right now,
including even today,
it'd be like 100 degrees, and yeah, it's going to be 98 degrees on Monday in Austin and about 100% humidity, right? So,
yeah. So I'm good being here. I love it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Stacey. Always a pleasure. Everybody should subscribe to Stacey's newsletter and podcast. And, of course, Jeff Jarvis, who is officially director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City of New York.
And I give up. I just give up.
He is the brightest person on our network.
I just can't stand it anymore.
He's the brightest guy I've ever met.
And I can't do it.
And a joy.
I just can't do it.
A joy. Are you doing that on purpose?
Yes. I've been doing it throughout the whole show. I've been riding the darn thing. It works perfectly for Stacey. She hits one button and looks magnificent.
She's gorgeous.
I mean that, Stacey.
You
looks
are
amazing.
Bright yellow at this point with orange furniture.
And an orange mouth.
an orange mouth.
And a pink mouth, though, a pink mouth, which clashes with my orange room.
Oh, no.
I can't stand this.
He looks
thing.
Like the Andy Warhol version of Jeff Jarvis. Thank you, Jeff.
It took me weeks to get this back down.
We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Come by and watch us at twit.tv/live. You can also listen live. If you're doing that, chat live at irc.twit.tv. Downloadable versions of every show we do are available on our website, twit.tv, audio or video. If you enjoy Purple People, you might enjoy the video version of this
show. And those
show.
Who eat them.
Somebody said you're in the movie Cocoon. You can get that at twit.tv/twig. But as I have mentioned, I think once or twice on this show, subscribing is the best option. That way you'll get it every day, every week, the minute it's fresh off the presses, the minute it's available. twit.tv/subscribe if you need help. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.